International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Adam 5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 34. The main topic for this installment is, do we humans create our own reality through shared and focused belief? Do we turn our myth into truth, affecting that reality in tangible ways? And are dogs more important than people? Plenty of quantity and quality in the way of listener feedback. We'll hear from The Stealth Geek, Mr. T, Sarah, James Stubbs, Murray, Kurt the Camera Guy, Draco X, and we have three new members of the Frapper Map to welcome. And yes, I have another new anti-snore plastic strip on my nose. I'll be breathing and talking more right after this.
The universe grows smaller every day. And the threat of aggression by any group, anywhere, can no longer be tolerated. There must be security for all, or no one is secure. Now, this does not mean giving up any freedom, except the freedom to act irresponsibly. Your ancestors knew this when they made laws to govern themselves. We of the other planets have long accepted this principle. We have an organization for the mutual protection of all planets. We created a race of robots. Their function is to patrol the planets in spaceships like this one and preserve the peace. The result is we live in peace, without arms or armies, secure in the knowledge that we are free from aggression and war. Your choice is simple. Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.
Yes, the Stealth Geek is back. Not only returned with episode 5 of The Stealth Geek, his podcast out of Ontario, Canada, but he went and created that super cool bumper for IDDFOS. Thank you, Dickie, and glad to hear your voice back in action and your show back in production. Check it out, folks. Find his permanent link on the IDDFOS homepage or go to www.artofbalance.net/The Stealth Geek. Geek from a different perspective. Good deal. Top of the show. Hi, everybody. I know. I felt many minds' eyes burning a hole in the back of my head this week. A few listeners, I don't know who, but a few listeners just absolutely fed up with this show, moseying along and dragging its butt 2 whole weeks at a time without posting. Well, you know what I say to you. You're right. It ain't fair. The show should come out once a week. I just can't seem to do it some weeks. I've got a dozen real-life obstacles that aren't worth your hearing about, so I won't go into them. It's just that life interferes. I can only say that the policy remains RAWAP. It's just been timing out as bi-weekly lately. And that's not the plan. It isn't now, nor was it ever. It's still going for released as weekly as possible, and I'm doing my best. All right. Well, that said, I would like to find something out. In Dragon's Landing number 56 Bravo, or is it Bravo 56? Not sure. But anyway, they made a reference on the show and in their schnotes to a picture done by John. Are you listening, John? That'd be keen. I hope so. A picture that had something to do with the mini-drama intro that I did for Dragon's Landing episode number 46, the whole takeoff on It's a Wonderful Life. Unfortunately, it appears as if the link to the picture expired shortly after they posted the notes, and I never saw it. Does anyone have that picture? Or can you direct me to where else it might be? I never saw it, and I'd love to know what it was. If I click on the link in their notes, it takes me to a page that says, sorry, that postcard is no longer available. So anybody that can fill me in on that, maybe direct me to it, that'd be great. Okay, next up, a thank you. A thank you to who? A thank you to the Norwegian Viking, Mr. T, for sending me an invite to get my very own Gmail account. Excellent, yes, thank you. As he said in his invitational email, and he's right, if I get the same kind of breakdown with my hosting company that happened last month, never hurts to have an alternate email address for Adam 5. So Here it is, folks, anim5@gmail.com. But here's the difference. They wouldn't take the username anim5. Nothing as short as that. It had to be longer. So what I ended up doing was I spelled out the number. So if anyone wants to spell out my Gmail address, it is Alpha November India Mike Foxtrot India Victor Echo at gmail.com. Just spell out the number 5 instead of putting the number 5. Anyway, I'll stick that address link on the main page for the show underneath my regular one. And thank you big time, Mr. T. I've already started using it. Lately, the regular anim5 with the number anim5@anim5.com, it seems to be behaving, but it's good to have the backup. Next, what do we have? Well, the Frapper Map. We have some overdue welcomes to the Frapper Map. 3 new members, and a couple of them aren't so new. I just happened to miss them because I neglected to remember how to use the scroll down arrow for a while there. But anyway, first of all, let us warmly extend a hand to MADDRJEFFE. Now that could be Madder Jeff, or that could be Madra Jeff, but my interpretation of those letters, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I read that as Mad Dr. Jeff. So welcome to the Mad Doctor from Portsmouth, Virginia, who said, when he placed his pin,
"Scientifically speaking, anim5 can do no wrong."
That is simultaneously one of the most flattering things I've seen written about me, and the most inaccurate. Thank you most certainly, Mad Doctor, for the kind endorsement, but I think I demonstrate with each new episode just how much wrong can be done by one weenie with a microphone. However, I'm going to email an image to you. I am going to email the image of the Flash Gordon and Dale Arden picture, your signature pic that the Frapper team or the Frapper pages, software, mechanics, whatever, seem to have a hard time with. I'm going to send that to you on a reduced scale. You may have done this yourself. You may have tried it already. I don't know. Mad Dr. Jeff mentioned in an email that the Frapper map was not accepting the image he wanted to put up with his map pin. So you may have tried reducing it to 100 by 100 pixels. And if the Frapper thingy wouldn't take that, then I don't know what to say. But I'll send you a smallened version of that comic illustration that you have, and maybe you can give that a try if you haven't done so already. That's a nice picture, by the way. I like good, clean comic book graphics when they're well done, and that was. So I messaged. Now, I missed Mad Dr. Jeff in the last episode and really should have welcomed him because he has been a Frapper member for a while. And his response, he had this response when I sent a message to him through Frapper. He writes,
"I'm enjoying your podcast a lot and am mostly caught up. You going crazy at work was pretty funny because not only do I procrastinate, but I talk to myself a lot come deadline time. Utterly awesome. What I like best, though, is your ability to hammer out podcasts. What sort of setup do you use, out of curiosity?"
My podcasting, first of all, thank you very much. Thank you indeed. Always great to get good feedback, especially positive. But my podcasting setup is as follows. I don't think I've ever actually listed this or told anyone, but 6-1 to me, here's what I use. I record into a Shure SM58 microphone, and that's clipped into a short boom stand, store-bought. That is phantom powered by an Art Tube amp. And coming out of the Art Tube amp is an XLR cable that goes directly into my sound card. And that sound card is an M-Audio Delta audio file. The recording software that I use is that economical program. No, it's not Audacity. I have used Audacity, and it's a perfectly fine program. But I've had for many, many, many years a program put out by SoundForge originally. And recently it was bought by Sony. And now it's called SoundForge Audio Studio. It cost me $80 when I bought the most recent version of it. But all the mixing, all the editing, the conversions, everything, it's done through that software. I don't have a mixer board. And occasionally when I make use of that Olympus Digital Field Recorder, it has its own cable for transferring the sound files to the PC. And once I get those there, I hose them off as best as I can with Audio Studio. Now, here's a little cheap podcasting tip, something that takes away those awful plosive popping P distortions you may sometimes hear on other podcasts. Yes, it is a pop screen, but I didn't buy mine. I made my own. And you can too. All you need is a wire hanger, some thin strips of duct tape, and a single layer of pantyhose. Stretch that single layer of pantyhose over the loop in the wire hanger and tape it all up. It can look just like an absolute total amateur crap city, which mine does. But so long as it does the job, who cares? Nobody listening to you cares that you have a plastic strip on your nose and a wire hanger with pantyhose stretched on it in front of your face. It's what it sounds like that matters. Oh my, that was the longest welcome to a Frapper map, I think, in the history of the show. So I better say thank you, Mad Dr. Jeff, for joining. And if Mad Dr. Jeff is not how you'd like to be referred to, if you've got a different pronunciation for me to use, please send it along. Otherwise, I'll assume I'm correct. And now I will... So thank you indeed. And I will move on now to who? To Draco X from Howell, Michigan. A hearty welcome to Draco X, who I believe is a man of inner strength, quiet confidence, and steady nerve. A balanced being of peace. Do I know that? No, I don't. I assume it to be the case, because he is a martial arts instructor. Now, if I'm wrong about any of that, I'm sure he'll let us know. Welcome indeed, Draco X. We'll hear more from Draco X as part of the main show in an excellent email. Next, from... this is news. This indeed is news, and this is a big hearty welcome. We have Murray on the Frapper map. And Murray is from Melbourne, Australia. And Murray said when he placed his pin,
"Doing my bit to make it a little bit more international."
A little bit more. Wow. Our very first listener from the Australian continent. That is too cool for words. When Murray placed his pin on the map, he signed on as Static. But after an email or two, I've come to understand that he'd be fine with us referring to him as Murray. And I'm not going to embarrass myself by trying to do an Australian accent, but I'm just floored. I'm just floored when I think about the reach podcasting has. It's scaring me. All the international listeners, they blow my mind. I love it. So I welcome you, Murray, and encourage any other listeners from down under to chime in and to say hello, too. And fortunately for me, Murray wrote a quick note to anim5.com when he joined, or I might have missed him for this episode, and here is what he said.
"Hi there. Murray from Australia here. Static on the Frapper. Just a quick note to say I have been listening and enjoying the show for the last 5 months. Been lurking, but finally decided to email. One of my favorite shows was the Chipmunk Rant on Exxon. I do like the new format, episodes 21+, although I do miss the occasional show on the road, as it were. Keep up the good work, Murray."
Thank you very much. I think you'll be pleased to know that toward the end of this show, we'll hear 15 minutes of brand new Chipmunk Rant. Sorry, Mr. T, it's only 15 minutes, which may be just as entertaining, if not more so. So welcome and good on ya, Murray. If you have friends you know also listening to IDDFOS, please ask them to write in and just say hi. They don't have to join the map. And you know, that goes for anyone listening, here in the U.S. and anywhere else that the podcast is reaching. If you want to write in, but you don't really want the email or your handle right on the show, that's cool too. Just say so in the email. I won't breathe a word of your existence or quote you in any way. I perfectly understand just wanting to listen, but I don't want anyone listening to feel they can't add input without being read on the show. You just got to let me know. You just got to tell me, that's all. So there we have it. A growing Frapper membership. And what shall we move on to? This last topic. Yes, a last topic of business before we get on to the good stuff, which is your letters. And what is that topic? Well, there are now 4 ways to become a part of the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space podcast. 1, send an email and say hi, or talk about whatever subject's going on in any of the episodes that you've heard. 2, record an audio. It works fine. I can get it, and I can play it on the show. 3, join the Frapper Map. And 4, sign up and participate in the...
Witness the power of this fully operational battle station.
I mean, the forums. What do you know? They work. Yes, the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space forums are fully functional and active. So active that in just 2 short weeks, I've already grabbed up material to place in this show's Gurukatingatongatongs. Members, we need more. Thus far, we have the first brave souls to join and test it out, and they are Direwolf, Dirt Merchant, James Stubbs, Mr. T, and the Stealth Geek. And of course, I'm on there too. Now, even if you don't sign up right away, click on the link and you'll click on the link that you'll find at the top of the IDDFOS homepage to get there and read up on what the very first posts are. I think you'll find that temperature ratios and cure rates for room temperature vulcanizing rubber, along with the industrial applications connected with it, never sounded so provocative and exciting. Of course, I'm kidding. There's fun stuff there. It's interesting stuff. And you can make it more interesting by joining yourself and participating. Want some examples? Well, I'm going to post links that I thought were just too much fun to leave on the forums. One of the posts came by way of Mr. T. It's a place online where you can create your own action figure. It's lots of fun. And the other was a link from James Stubbs to a company called Andgore Toys, where you can create and order an action figure of you if you've got $400 to spend. That's steep. But it's also fun. Just check out the site. And also, you will find in the Gurukatingatongatongs for episode 34 an image of an international detective dragon. A rare portrait indeed. There's no describing it. You just have to see it yourself. This is a bona fide dragon, wings and all, in the classic gumshoe trench coat. Super stuff. Photoshop fun at its finest, and courtesy of James Stubbs, who is deathly afraid of reindeer hooves in inappropriate places. Thank you for that fine piece of work, James. So as I said, you all can see that in the forums or on the IDDFOS homepage. Well now, I believe I've gotten the important pre-show business taken care of, so it's time... Oh crap, wait, one more thing. This is just a point of interest link. It's about gaming dice, ultimately cool gaming dice, and it also may be something that you've all seen and explored thoroughly already. If that's the case, I'm sorry, but maybe there's one or two of you that haven't seen this. Why would you have seen this already? Because you probably heard about it on the Roundtable side dish way back in August of last year. Mick Bradley listed these folks as one of his Gen Con gems from... I believe it's side dish number 3, Roundtable side dish number 3. But I heard that show again recently because my podcast Fetcher Juice grabbed it from the consolidated Harping Monkey audio stream as a new show. Well, anyway, the place is called Q Workshop. They're creators of gorgeous dice, lots of styles. They'll even do custom work. And just check them out if you haven't already. They're in Poland, I believe. The web address is www.q-workshop.com. And the site itself is really impressive. One of the coolest things you can do there is take a look at a die design, and any one of the dice that they have available for sale. You can take a look at their designs in a rotating 3D. And just for kicks on individual die, they throw in the ability to do random rolls as you're looking at them. It's very cool. It's a very cool dice site. And a late thank you to Mick Bradley for putting that on our radar so long ago on the Roundtable. Okay, now we can go to break. And we'll return from the break for the main body of the show and the good stuff, which is your letters. Back in a bit.
It is important to make iced coffee properly, and it's easy too. Simply be sure to allow for dilution by the ice. In other words, make your coffee somewhat stronger than usual, and always use a blend that is extra rich in flavor. And the blend that has the delicious, full-bodied goodness you need is Chase & Sanborn Coffee. It's unusually rich in flavor because it's blended from the choicest coffees in the world. And you get this superb blend at the peak of its goodness, for Chase & Sanborn dated coffee is guaranteed fresh by our dating plan and rapid delivery system. There's no danger of flat, stale, rancid taste. With dating and rapid delivery, Chase and Sanborn dated coffee doesn't need a high-priced container. Instead, we use an inexpensive paper dated bag, and you get the saving. And now you get a double saving. Due to increased sales and resulting economies, this superb blend can now be sold at the lowest price in its history. Buy a bag of Chase and Sanborn dated coffee tomorrow.
Hello, I'm Nev.
And I'm Sarah.
From Does My Geek Look Big In This.
And you're listening to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.
The best detective dragons in the universe.
Alrighty, so... first up, I'm going to read some of an email that came my way back in October of '06. And this is from The Camera Guy, and he wrote...
Hi, Adam 5. This note is in response to your request for listener-driven discussion topics. I've got two of them for you. They both deal with the vast majority of humanity, at least the humanity I know of. First, color me naive, which I believe is a light shade of pastel tangerine. But there are certain things that I don't understand about human nature and would love to have someone explain them to me. Granted, most of the stupid things that people do I get the origin of. Usually it boils down to selfishness, lust for power or money, that sort of thing. But the following I do not see for the life of me. Why do people act in a way that is counter to their own self-interest or professed beliefs? You touched on this briefly in episode 26 when you referred to a wind farm project in New England, which was almost single-handedly killed by a famous senator who professes his protection of the environment and compassion for the little guy. You know, the one that might have lower electric bills if we had more wind farms. On a more personal level, Mrs. Camera Guy and I knew two couples who were getting divorced. All parties involved said that they wanted to leave their respective marriages. Then one member of each couple proceeded to make the process drag on for years, doing things that in the long run made things worse for all parties involved, including themselves, rather than just getting it over with like they said they wanted. Why is it that people take pleasure in the misfortune of others, even when it will have no bearing on their personal lives? The first example of this that comes to mind are the pop culture obsession with celebrities and their falls from grace. There are dozens of tabloids and magazines dedicated to the subject. How does some millionaire who pretends to be someone else affect me when they get busted in L.A. for possession? Why should I enjoy that? Another example is taxes. Why should I feel better if someone else's taxes are going up, particularly if mine aren't going to go down? Yet an entire political party lives and dies by our wanting to screw other people over with no gain for ourselves. And this also expands to the world stage as well. On 9/11, I saw video footage of people in certain countries dancing in the streets at the deaths of over 3,000 Americans. Estimates were actually higher at the time in those horrific attacks. There's no way those dancers could have known and therefore wanted dead those specific people. Their deaths were not going to feed them better that day, or give their children vaccinations the next morning, or convince their leaders that having the destruction of another country in their constitution just might be a bad PR move. No, they were just taking joy in the suffering of another people. And in a way, even though I am a seeker of truth, I hope I never truly understand that. Why is it that some people seem to want to be unhappy? This one baffles me to no end. We live in a time in our country that, if you want to, you could find alternative employment, and if you are reasonably skilled, you can do pretty well for yourself. But we all know that guy that comes in every day and complains from the time he gets there until he goes home. And not content to be miserable himself, he will do what he can to wear you and your co-workers down as well, like a river cutting through solid rock to form the Grand Canyon. I've actually confronted a few of these people in my workplace and said, "Dude, if I was as miserable as you, I'd quit and find another job. No paycheck is worth what you feel." Actually, I had one that listened to me. I hope he's happier now. But the others stayed and kvetched until the day I left that account. And the other people who fit this category are the folks that have to find the dark cloud in every silver lining. Every good thing that happens to them must have a downside. Dude, sometimes good things just happen. Deal with it and enjoy. I cannot imagine going through life going out of my way to find the bad stuff. It usually finds me on its own just fine. Thank you, Kurt the camera guy.
Thank you, Kurt. Sorry that took 4 months to surface. And in a way, it kind of makes me feel embarrassed about my upcoming chipmunk rant. I mean, you're absolutely right. There are vast numbers out there that pounce on media reports of celebrities or mega millionaires or what have you getting arrested or getting divorces or getting fat. And these people are buying up these ridiculous magazines in order to get the dirt. It's sad. I don't understand it either. I really don't see the appeal. And then there's also a ton of folks that just seem to cling, as you said, they just cling to pessimism and misery, and sometimes they're quiet about it, sometimes they're really loud about it. Sometimes they're like living martyrs, living walking martyrs. It's enough to make you want to drop them in the middle of Rwanda or Somalia or Indonesia or Iraq and just say, there, now you've got some valid reasons to be miserable. I tell you, I mean, I've done a lot of role-playing online in little mini communities. And I started with what they refer to as Flat Chat. The program, I think, was called Excite Chat. It's a community role play where all you have are these little postage stamp-sized avatar pictures skipping around in front of web pages that are created by the users. And you always find these poor souls, or at least I did anyway, who just seem to have the weight of the whole world on their shoulders. I don't know whether it was because they were teenagers, and, you know, it was a hormonal thing where they didn't really have a choice, or whether these were full-grown adults. In some cases, I think they were full-grown adults, but they were in total depression for months and months and months, and occasionally they just want to talk about it with me. And because usually in whatever situation I was, group I was belonging to, situation I was put in, I was usually some kind of an official member. Before too much time passed, I was usually put in some kind of a role-playing rank like Duke or Baron or something. They give me the keys to the place too often, almost everywhere I go. I can't help that. Anyway, what I tried to do, if possible, was to bring them to one of my own pages where they could talk about the problems, and I discovered after a while that the last thing they wanted was to lose their misery. No matter what I said to them or how all their problems were attacked or explored, it just seemed like their depression was their most cherished possession. They just wanted to be sure that as many other folks as possible knew about it, because sympathy seemed to be the only human contact that they knew how to deal with or valued. Very strange. I mean, it starts to get funny out of context. I mean, part of the rant that I'll have at the end of the show involves supermarkets. And I should make this perfectly clear. I want to make it clearly known that I'm aware that I live in one of the very few countries on earth that have a place to go where you can get damn near any kind of food you want in gross quantities. That's clean. That's safe. That's quality controlled by law. I know that kind of variety of choice is not something I'll find the world over. I do know that. The rant is supposed to be funny. But I know when I have it good. I recognize that. So what about... what about that? What about what Kurt's asking for episode 35 as a topic? Question for episode 35. Let's get that out of the way at the top, and I'll repeat it towards the end of the show. Why do so many people seem to get such irrational delight out of the suffering of others, whether they're famous or not? And why is it that some people just cling to misery and amplify the negative all the time? I think those are two valid questions for episode 35. And they have a very significant bearing on this episode as well, when we talk about universal human attitude and a shared consciousness, or unconscious, that as we wanted to explore, may be affecting the world directly. So thank you again, Kurt the Camera Guy, for more insight and more IDDFOS food for thought. What do we have next up? Next up is this email from Dickie, the Stealth Geek. And the subject line is,
finally, some time to do something other than listen.
And he writes, first paragraph talks a bit about the bumper And I thank you indeed, Stealth Geek, once again for that excellent bumper. Now, here's a quote.
Do we create our own reality? Absolutely, fully, and completely. A person is responsible for their own perception. And while that reality is affected by a person's experiences, people for the most part form their own reality. I don't know how much collective consciousness has to do with negative thinking, unless you consider this. As far as I'm concerned, North Americans, for the most part, have a collective unconscious called network TV. Television is very good at creating the reality those in control of it want to showcase. Just look at CNN or any other network news show. Reality is being dictated nightly from 6 to 7 Eastern Standard Time. And when was the last time you saw more than one happy story on network TV news? I honestly can't remember. They'll show you cars on fire, strife in the Middle East, and people shooting each other over $50, but rarely do you see the stories about the goodness of humanity, because I know it's there. Nobody I know personally has shot anyone or committed any other kind of act that the news anchors tell me anyone is capable of at any time, anywhere. Trust no one. So I know it's not all bad. What I'm trying to get at is the fact that if all of our information services are reporting the negative with very few and far between bright spots thrown in, so they can say, hey, we're showing you some good stuff, now back to the doom. Myths are supposed to exist to explain things we don't understand and shed some light on the world. But if those responsible for telling us what's going on in the world are just reporting that, hey, it sucks out there, then what reason would most people have to believe anything different? I feel like I'm kind of getting off topic. I think this is turning into a rant against network news and not so much an answer to the original question, sorry. I'm not sure if I've even answered anything here, so I'm going to leave it at that for the moment. Sayonara for now, Dickie.
No, Dickie, you're not at all off topic there. And thank you for that email. More excellent stuff. You've got a valid point about a major architect of the attitudes and the outlooks in the developed world, anyway. Television, media in general. It goes all the way back to William Randolph Hearst and the Bay of Pigs horse that he pulled. You supply the pictures, I'll supply the war. And what you wrote also ties in directly to what Kurt was saying about so many people sucking up the pain of others like champagne, and, well, alternating between doing that and wallowing in a nice warm bath of poor me. And the news media is a business. I think that's something that gets missed occasionally. It goes by the boards. The news media is a business, and it is very evident, at least to me, that as a business, it will do anything to increase the bottom line, and that includes running only those stories that bring in the highest ratings, not necessarily reporting all of the news. They're appealing to the lowest common denominator, in this case, possibly, capitalizing on the darkest human traits. And that must be a thing that they learned a long time ago. But as you say, all doom, or mostly gloom, will perpetuate the cycle. And it's what I've said this often, the news media are constantly looking for and pushing out anything that will keep the viewers or readers afraid, because it then becomes a function of the survival instinct for their patrons, us, to buy the paper or log in online or switch on the tube just to keep informed about all those awful things that are coming to get us. They're doing what pays. I don't like it either. And I don't think it's helping. No, I don't. I think that probably is more along the lines of the self-fulfilling prophecy scenario that Kurt was talking about probably two or three episodes ago. I think television has had every bit as much of an impact on human history and modern human beings as the printing press did, possibly more so. And the effects are still not fully realized nor understood. I think there should be an IDDFO, an International Detective Dragons from Outer Space episode, or two, just on television. Talk about jumping the track. I think I wandered off topic there. Thank you. Once again, Stealth Geek, most interesting. And more ideas to ponder. It's time for another break, I'd say, and we'll continue with your show, your letters, your feedback. right after this.
Listen. Listen to an electronic miracle. This electronic miracle, Accuray, means that everything from auto tires to apple pie, battleship steel to baby food, butter to cigarettes, can be made better and safer for you. Now meet Mr. Bert Choate, brilliant young president of Industrial Nucleonics. Well, Bert, exactly what is Accuray?
Well, George, it is a device by which a stream of electrons passes through and analyzes the product while it is actually being made. They transmit what they see to this electronic brain, which adjusts the production machinery for errors down to millionths of an inch.
One more question, one that so many people ask me. How does Accuray make Chesterfield a better cigarette than was ever possible before?
Every cigarette made with Accuray control contains a more precise measure of perfectly packed tobaccos, so Chesterfield smokes smoother, without hot spots or a hard draw.
And that's why Chesterfield tastes so much better. I guess that's why you smoke them yourself, Bert.
You see, I know what Accuray can do.
Well, there's your answer. If you want tomorrow's better cigarette today, next time, stop. Remember. Only Chesterfield is made the modern way with Accuray. Best for you.
Next, I am very happy to read a new letter from Sarah of Does My Geek Look Big in This? And I think I speak for most of the IDDFOS listeners when I say, Sarah, Nev, come on back and do a show. We miss you. But I do realize all work, bad. Time off, good. But it's very cool to hear from Sarah again, and the subject line is
Hosting the Casimir. Hi, Adam. Been meaning to email you all week. Nev and I went away for the weekend with a few friends, and I took the above wonderful book with me. Needless to say, I was quite unsociable on the holiday and mostly spent the time under a blanket on a sofa reading. What an amazing book! It rocks! I love it! Is there a sequel? Thank you for introducing me to the world of Landon and Jaren. Hope you're well and doing dandy. We spent most of January hibernating and playing on our computers. A very unproductive, dark, wintry month here. Best of days, Sarah.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Dark wintry months encourage hibernation. It might have done me some good to take a holiday. I just never seemed to have the planets lined up right, or the schedule worked out, or the funds that I should have put aside for it. But you enjoyed hosting the Casimir. That's absolutely wonderful to hear. That's excellent. I've been promoting hosting the Casimir on the NM5 site, and I've pushed it through my little audio spots here, not just because it's a great story, because it is, and not just because I did the cover art for it, because I did. but primarily because hosting the Casimir is the first book of a fantasy trilogy. Yes. Yes, Sarah, there is a sequel. And the rest of them, too, are part of a great story. I find myself at times very jealous of CE's discipline and writing skill. And she worked very hard for many years to write the books in the Casimir series and publish the first one and expects at some point to publish the other two, but she just can't go forward with that until she sold her copies of book one. And she's sold many copies of the book, and she has them out as gifts also to people that she knows. And she sold some through work and has some out to family. One reader is in New Zealand. So and the response to the story has almost universally been, when can I get book two? So it was really good to hear that. I'm just glad to hear additional praise for the work from an unbiased and intelligent source. So I thank you, Sarah, and CE Sales thanks you, too. I also hope that when Does My Geek returns, you and Nev are fully recharged and rested up for the exciting year about to happen. What with your official status as the podcast of Gen Con UK, it's going to be one hell of a fun ride. I hope it goes great for both of you, and I know it's going to be a boatload of fun to listen to as it unfolds. So most cool. Thank you, Sarah. Next up, what do we have? We have an email from Mr. T, the Norwegian Viking. And the subject line is,
International Detective Dragons is like wine and cheese. As time goes, it just keeps getting better and better.
Okay, now I'm getting an attitude of overconfidence, and I must hurry this along so that I can go get my head deflated. But Mr. T writes,
a good enough forum, but we really need to do something about the Save the Rainforest look. I don't know what setting choices you've got, but if you can add your own CSS, then just add these sentences.
And he puts some useful coding for making changes. Mr. T, my choices for the forums are extremely limited. I have no access to the folders where the page code and the images are kept. I can't actually change any of the cascading style sheets. I don't know. I suppose it's a security thing for GoDaddy, or I have to pay extra or something. It looks like I'm stuck with it unless I can get them on the phone sometime during my lunch break at work. We'll see. I'll give it a try. I do thank you, though, for looking into that and giving me a solution. If I do get access, I'll make use of that. But Mr. T continues.
Dogs and humans. I have a dog, Simba. He's a total bastard. He's a mixed breed of three races, and he's the best dog in the world. He's 9 years old and still behaves as a puppy, but the gray hairs on his nose give away his age. He knows when he is safe. More importantly, he knows when we are unsafe. Therefore, I feel safe around him, and he feels safe around me. Unfortunately, or ironically, 3 years ago, I spontaneously got allergic to dogs. So now Simba lives with my parents. But are dogs in general more important than humans? May I be blunt? No. Of course dogs aren't more important than humans. If we had a town consisting of dogs and men, and we had to eliminate one to make the other survive, we would choose to eliminate the dogs. No questions asked. One has the tendency to pick one's fellow species. If you ask me personally, who is more important, Simba or my neighbor? No offense, neighbor, but Simba is more important to me personally. Is he important for the human race? No. Sorry. We are the rulers of this earth, no matter how we try to deny it. In the end, we make the choice. Only Mother Earth and other deities are over us. But if we were to ask a dog, what would he answer? For a dog to function in a domestic environment, the dog must feel that he is of a lower rank in the hierarchy of the pack. If not, the dog could turn out to be difficult to control or even become aggressive. Therefore, the term dog and master is created. For the dog, his owner's life is more important than his own. Dogs in hunting situations have long been known for going on suicide missions against bigger predators to protect their masters. Which reminds me of a true story I heard once. Insert flashback chimes. A family and their dog lived on a farm in North Norway. The dog always slept with the baby in the nursery, because for some reason that calmed the baby. One night, a terrible ruckus of claws, scratching, floor, and baby screams was heard. The father got out of bed and ran as fast as he could toward the nursery. The baby was crying on the floor, covered in blood and bite marks. In the corner, the dog lay panting with blood and spit dripping from his jaw. The father grabbed his child and locked the dog in the room. Hands shaking, he got his hunting rifle, hurried back to the room, and shot his dog without a flinch. After the shot, he took a second glance across the room. To his horror, behind the door lay a wolf, dead. The wolf had been killed by the dog who was merely protecting his young master. So who do you feel sorry for? The dog, the child, or the man?
Hey. God, that was a downer. You know what's weird about that? It doesn't even have to be true. Even if it's a total piece of fiction, it still makes me want to kick the man right in the fork. There's a piece of work by Mark Twain called A Dog's Tale, and it has very much the same theme as that farm story, and it has the same incredible impact on the emotions, actually probably more, because It takes hold of a few more strings to pull over a longer period of time. An excellent piece of work. I'll put a direct link to it in the Gutta-Gutta-Dinga-Dunga-Dungs. There's a Project Gutenberg text for it that I can just... You can link right to it, read it, not read it, whatever. Be a quick click. And you know, there are few emotional buttons to push that are more effective in human beings than our empathy and our pathos for benevolent innocence destroyed by cruel injustice. Nothing gets us going emotionally like that. There's some kind of an inner sense that really makes that a strong reaction. And it doesn't speak well for the human image, that dog's tail story. But if you're really familiar with Twain, you wouldn't exactly expect a glowing report about humanity. Mr. T continues with some suggestions for the bill of fare on the stratospheric veranda, and includes recipe links and Wikipedia definitions, which of course I will also place in the Gutta-Gutta-Dinga-Dunga-Dungs. He writes,
Frapper menu, a Norwegian Viking gourmet meal. Starter, sour cream porridge with dried meat and lefse on the side. Main meal, smalahov with rutabaga, mash, and potatoes. That would be smoked, dried, and cooked sheep's head.
Smalahov is smoked, dried, and cooked sheep's head. Alrighty.
Drink, vorterol.
I don't know, I could be slaughtering that entirely.
Vorterol, or vortbier, a non-alcoholic malt drink with a strange aftertaste.
I'll bet. I'm sorry. What can I say?
Optional drink. For those with a weak stomach, we can recommend some akavit to help digest the fatty condensation.
And there's Wikipedia links to all this stuff. I'm going to have to check this out. I actually haven't gone and looked, but I will. Okay, he continues.
If this meal doesn't make your stomach squirm or give you a hurling sensation, then you are a true Viking. Go get your horny hat. P.S. iTunes can be set to download only the most recent episode, but all your episodes are available and visible through iTunes. See picture. Quoniam nos existo. Best of days, Mr. T.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. T. Rich input and varied. The Norwegian Viking was good enough to forward a screenshot of his iTunes feed listing for IDDFOS, and I was glad to see it all there, but it's good to know that the most... That there's such a setting as most recent episode, and it can keep people from getting two-part shows. Because I'm most likely going to post them both at once. And that may be why so many downloads were for part two of everything. Thank you for clearing that up for me. I'm not going to go to the next letter until I ask this. Have you personally eaten the Viking meal you just wrote about? I mean, all of it. I'm just curious. All right, back in a bit.
Today's fast, nerve-wracking pace is making millions suffer from the discomforts of gastric hyperacidity. Eating on the run, working under pressure, nervous tension, and smoking more than you should all help cause the trouble many know as American stomach. When this happens to you, when you're distressed by such symptoms as heartburn, acid indigestion, or a feeling of fullness, take Bisodol mint-flavored tablets. Bisodol mint-flavored tablets are not a makeshift, not a cure-all. They're specifically designed to do one job, and to do it quickly and well. And that job is to bring you prompt, pleasant relief of American stomach. Bisodol mint-flavored tablets help neutralize the excess acids that cause this discomfort. They soothe irritated membranes while gently helping to restore normal balance. So next time you're upset and distressed due to acid indigestion, remember to take Bisodol mint-flavored tablets, that's all. You'll like their refreshing mint flavor, and they're so handy to carry. That's spelled Bisodol. Bisodol mint-flavored tablets. Only 25 cents.
Okay, next up, input shared from... Why am I losing my voice? input is shared from James Stubbs. And now, here's the thing. I should just email you and ask. But could you do me a favor? If you get a chance, let me know in an email. On the forums, you signed up as simply James, which makes perfect sense. I mean, as you said, it's less formal. Would you object to being called James from here in? I mean, here in the podcast as well. I just get this odd feeling of presumptuousness when I just say James. And I don't know whether you prefer the formal James Stubbs all the time. Please drop me a note, let me know. But anyway, James Stubbs, what's the subject line?
My brain hurts.
And he writes,
"Hiya again, Adam. I'm running late with my replies to episode 33 due to a really persistent cold and work drama of the bad kind. Anyway, let me try to address the questions you raised in my usual bumbling, unfocused manner."
Where do you get that bumbling, unfocused manner stuff? I don't think your manner is bumbling and unfocused. But, I won't go into reviews, I'll just read your letter. Anyway, he continues,
"I don't think there really is a question about myth becoming reality. Voodoo is an excellent example of that in practice. Sympathetic magic has been around for a long time, and there have been numerous documented cases of people becoming violently ill or dying because of their belief in curses placed upon them. Naturally, you can attribute the physiological effects to anxiety attacks, depression, and stress, but to the affected, the belief itself is real enough to bring upon them the doom they expect. However, I'm not prepared to entertain the idea that Thor, Zeus, God, at all, really existed. That's stretching things from a literary perspective to the light of rational examination, and one that tends to fail every time, and just pisses people off who don't share your beliefs that you dare question the nature of their dogma. However, on the topic of a unified human reality, I believe there is one to a very limited extent. Human compassion, I think, is universal. Very few people truly enjoy the suffering and misery of others, although watching someone get hit in the groin never seems to get old, or not funny."
Ow! My groin!
Sorry, I just flashed on the George C. Scott football in the groin thing from The Simpsons. Sorry about that.
"Very few people truly enjoy the suffering and misery of others and would do what they could to help. However, this compassion is often cluttered and obfuscated by localized phenomena, such as social or racial mores, language barriers, and socioeconomic issues. This is going to sound really hippie of me, but I think that if people would just view others as fellow human beings rather than those people from there, you'd get more understanding and a bit more of a pronounced unified force." Ew. I feel all touchy-feely emo now. I'm going to go watch a slasher flick. "On the topic of the value of dogs versus human life, I'm not the best person to be commenting on this. I don't hold a lot of human life of any value because I am emotionally fed up with the rampant stupidity and pettiness that I see on a daily basis with my job. I can certainly see the opposite view, but like I said, I'm burned out. I like my dog. But if I had to deal with totally neurotic and ill-behaved canines all day long, I'm sure my opinion would change there too. It's a purely emotional issue that really can't be objectively examined without personal bias creeping in. Or in my case, kicking in the door, eating all the food in your refrigerator, and trashing your couch. Would I personally want to be judge, jury, and executioner? In some of my deepest fantasies, absolutely. But in reality, I'd hesitate to place that moral responsibility on anyone, partially from pity and partially from fear of the abuse of that power. And I realize this isn't much of an answer, but that's about all you're going to get from me on the topic without going into some really disturbing territory. Can we get a fart joke episode to offset this one? Because I have a feeling things are going to get so deep that I'll want a mining helmet and a canary in a birdcage before this one is over with. James Stubbs."
Thank you very much, James Stubbs. I know the feeling. Are dogs more important than people? I mean, ever since Sarah brought the question up, there was the temptation to toss it around like a fun party joke and just not get that close. Because if you really explore it, it turns into two questions. One of them springs right back to Direwolf's insight in the last show. What do we mean by important? Do we mean worth or value? And when we come to realize, yes, that's exactly what we mean, then the first question becomes, are human beings the most valuable species on the planet? Can we really, honestly answer yes? When we know that ecologically the best thing that could happen to the natural world is our immediate extinction. At present, though, we seem to be the only creatures harboring an emotional opinion about it and an intellectual preference. We'd rather stay. And the second question, an equally disturbing question is, are some people more important than others? Now, if I am going to be 100% honest in my answer, I'd have to say that based on my personal set of values and my biases, I would say that certain individuals are more valuable than others. And I get a skin-crawly feeling even when I'm saying that, because I don't even hypothetically want to consider myself capable of dividing up who would live and who would die under certain circumstances. I can give it a try with a super easy example. I can give it a try. I said I wanted to explore this, but I'm going to cop out. I'm going to pick a really easy one. I think Dr. Stephen Hawking is a far more valuable human being than some scumbag with a bomb strapped to himself. And yeah, that was too easy. But what's the problem? The problem is, how do you set a value or a worth or importance on a human life? How do you do it? I'll be blunt too, as far as the dog thing goes. I mean, just to get back to that, if I had to rescue either both of my dogs or a single baby, a stranger's baby, I'd rescue the baby. I mean, I think my dogs are great, but I'm sorry, they'll live for 12 years maybe and they'll be a fond memory to me, but someone's human child ready to live a long, conscious and human existence, I gotta go with the kid. If only so that I could face its parents, if it had any, so that I could know that my dogs died for the sake of saving a life. Not much gray area in some circumstances, and incredible amounts of gray area in others, particularly when you get between human beings. The value of human life. Is one human being more important than another? Are two human beings more important than one human being? How do you weigh this kind of stuff? You just can't. But the question has to be asked if you're going to ask the first one. If certain morals or values or personal criteria can so easily decide the relative worth of individuals, like Dr. Hawking and the terrorist, how long a step is it to take before you start assigning those values to whole groups? And that's always been the danger. That's always been the danger and the downfall of powerful people. It was one of the harshest lessons we had to learn, or maybe relearn, in the 20th century. You had a relatively small group of scumbags who came to the conclusion that the master race was more important than everybody else. And it could be taken to extremes. It can be taken to both extremes. If you place the value of human life and saving human life as the ultimate priority for both groups and individuals, you end up with some really odd dilemmas. For instance, all right, you're a doctor. Supposing you're a doctor. You have three patients in critical condition in front of you, but you can save all three of them. You can save one of them with a lung transplant. You can save the second one with a kidney transplant, and the third one with a heart transplant. There's three lives you can save. Oh, and you got a fourth one who could be cured of blindness if they got new corneas. All right? So what that means is one perfectly healthy human being pulled in off the street could save three lives and cure a blindness. How do you measure that? You can't go out and kill the donor. And if you ask the donor, what kind of position does that put him in? What if it was me? I mean, would I, if I were the donor pulled in off the street and somebody said, hey, will you save these three people? Would I feel guilty for the death of three people because I wouldn't sacrifice my life? What if the lung patient was a brilliant surgeon who could save hundreds and hundreds of people with the rest of his career? And the kidney patient was a physicist on the verge of a breakthrough in energy research? And the heart patient was Terry Pratchett before he started writing. What if the living donor, the living healthy, physically healthy donor, wasn't me, but was a guy proven guilty of serial child killing, but also found to be insane? Now, I'd put his lights out in a heartbeat, but ethically, it's supposed to be the wrong thing to do. And I don't know, why do we agonize over it and we try our damnedest to not assign that so-called value or worth or importance to human life and individual lives? Why do we work at not making those decisions? And I think it's because we know that we're not supposed to be deciding that. And because we know how easy, once we do start deciding that, we know how easy it becomes to shift that dividing line between who's valuable and who isn't. It's my understanding that doctors are placed in that same decision-making situation a lot. And leaders, military leaders, political leaders, in the direst of situations, take the Second World War. During the Second World War, an entire British city had to go unwarned that they were going to be bombed, that they were about to be bombed. Nobody could tell them anything. You know, men, women, and children all in this city that they discovered was going to be bombed, they couldn't tell them, they couldn't warn them, because if they did, it would tip the Nazis off that the Allies had broken their code. Can you imagine being a part of the decision-making process that prevented that from happening, prevented them from being warned? How do you deal with that? How do you weigh the value of that on an even bigger scale, on the opposite side, over in the Pacific? What kind of criteria and path of reasoning forced the use of the atomic bomb when it just becomes a weighing of casualty numbers? How do you get to a situation where you've got to weigh the numbers of two cities versus the collective casualties of a drawn-out and eventual conclusion to the war? Are some people more important than others? Is this individual more important than this other individual? James, I think the canary just keeled over.
In reality, I'd hesitate to place that moral responsibility on anyone, partially from pity and partially from fear of the abuse of that power.
You ain't kidding. Oh, it's break time again. And when we return, we'll hear from one of the newest members of the Frapper Map, Draco X. Back in a bit.
Don't you think you're being a little impractical here?
In what way, my good man?
Well, most of us are just everyday people with no more yachts or polo ponies than we need, you know.
Odd, I never thought of it that way, Harry. Oh, I guess I'm just a dreamer. But don't you think the inventory idea is basically sound?
Oh, yes, I certainly do, Fred, but I think it should be a sort of personal inventory, you know, of our appearance, and especially of our smiles. Since a smile can make or mar our attractiveness. Take inventory tonight, ladies and gentlemen, when you look in the mirror. Then remember this. For a smile you can be really proud of, massage your gums regularly with iPana toothpaste. Because iPana is especially made when used with massage to help give gums the toning and exercise they need but fail to get from creamy, well-cooked foods. And when gums are soft and tender, teeth are seldom bright and sparkling. That is why so many dentists advise this easy modern routine.
Every time you brush your teeth with iPana toothpaste, put a little extra iPana on your fingertip or toothbrush and massage it on your gums.
And, ladies and gentlemen, the very first time you use iPana, you do notice a remarkable and unique difference, a new tingle and exhilaration to your whole mouth. For when you massage with iPana, you can actually feel its stimulating effect upon your gum tissues, as lazy gums start to waken and circulation speeds up. And that helps bring greater health to your gums, and consequently more radiance to your smile. Prove this to yourself by stopping at any drugstore tomorrow for an economical tube of iPana toothpaste, and use it. Your friends will remember your smile if you remember iPana.
And now from Howell, Michigan, we have an email with the subject line, Howdy. It's from Draco X, and he writes,
Adam 5, hello. I wanted to drop you a quick line and say that I am enjoying your podcast. I am currently working through your back episodes, and I'm currently on number 26.
I'll say it every time. You have incredible patience. And thank you very much. I think I'll also add to that to anyone that goes back and catches up on all those old episodes. Episodes 10 and 11, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I wanted to read a play, so I read a play. I'm sorry. Never mind. Anyway, Draco X continues.
I really like the info you provided on role-playing and acting, but I also enjoyed your mini-dramas, and I'm glad to see that I have more coming up in future episodes to listen to.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
The two episodes about MMORPGs were great. You posed a very interesting question about why people don't role-play more in World of Warcraft and other MMORPGs, and I think the answer is simply because there is no reward structure for doing so in an MMORPG environment. At the gaming table, you can give XP to players based on how well you role-play, but online, there's no way to get the great World of Warcraft gods to give you XP based on how you act. I think that would require some major AI improvements in those games that I don't think exists. There really is no character in World of Warcraft or other MMORPGs, but more, like you said, avatars, or as I've heard them called, toons in World of Warcraft.
Yeah, that's a fact. You don't get squat for effective and interesting roleplay within the framework of any of the MMOs. I mean, maybe occasionally, if you're content with just trying to immerse your character by staying IC all the time, or you're lucky enough to get in with a group of good roleplayers, the best you'll get is just a series of scenes being played like vignettes on a stage, and World of Warcraft is like some kind of a painted backdrop behind you that you really have no effect on. They're just a scenery in the background. Great environment, but nothing can change it. As far as moving a story along, if you're role-playing, you're not having a direct effect on your environment. No dice, if you'll pardon the pun. It's like I said on one of those episodes, I forget which one, but all the props are there, just to take World of Warcraft as an example. All the props are there, just none of the freedom. You get a great-looking tavern, but you can't move anything in it, and you can't say anything to the NPCs that'll make a damn bit of difference. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Okay, sorry, he continues.
In one of your episodes, either you or a listener asked, can MMORPGs save lives or destroy them?
Yes, that was the show topic originated by Mr. T, which led to the MMO episodes.
And I believe the answer is yes. MMORPGs are a tool for entertainment. And since it is a tool, like any other tools, it can be used for a general helpful purpose or as a weapon for the destruction of something. It is a paradox, just like everything else we as human beings deal with on a daily basis. Just about every weapon out there started as a tool in one way or another. A butter knife is used to spread butter on bread, or it can be used to stab someone and end their life. Are butter knives bad? Of course not. Are they dangerous? They can be in certain hands. Same thing applies to guns. They are dangerous and lethal. But in the right hands, there are an effective tool for hunting food, protecting your home, etc. In the hands of an unskilled child who has their little ape going, ooh, shiny, play, play, they'll get seriously hurt if not killed. And it's not the fault of the gun. The gun was just lying there, minding its own business, doing nothing until someone came along and messed with it.
I could get emotionally driven while thinking or talking about guns. I mean, I think I have in the past, particularly when I get into hypotheticals, but whether I like it or not, I know the truth of it. Guns are a part of the human world, and so is nuclear medicine and nuclear weaponry. And it is, as you say, the tool user that holds the responsibility. I wish more gun owners recognized what you stated above, that it's a lethal tool. It's a tool, if you like, but it's designed to explosively put a hole in a target. And as an inert mechanism, it doesn't discriminate what that target will be. So, Well, I think you're going to make the point yourself. Let me just continue with the letter.
In my mind, it all depends on who is controlling the tool. If a person never leaves his apartment so that he can play World of Warcraft, then that person probably has an addictive personality. And if he didn't get addicted to World of Warcraft, he was probably going to get addicted to something else. WoW just happened to be there to fill that role. It could have been pot, alcohol, or even D&D.
I do get your point, Draco, Draco X, and I agree, but what an odd-sounding sentence. I can imagine the habitual use of pot and certainly the addiction of alcoholism, but I'll bet real money there's gamers out there that would love to just be able to play D&D in a group often enough to get addicted. Because judging by what I'm hearing from some of the feedback on a lot of these gaming podcasts, there's people out there, gamers out there, that are counting themselves lucky to be in a group that plays once a month. I'm sorry. I understand what you're getting at. Any enjoyable diversion can be abused by an addictive personality, just as any tool can be grossly misused. Draco concludes here. Draco X concludes.
Anyway, sorry for the long email, but I just wanted to share my thoughts and feelings with you. I do enjoy your podcast a lot, even if I disagree with you sometimes and I don't really care. I can disagree with someone and still enjoy their company and have a friendly and fun relationship with them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What he said.
I am looking forward to catching up with your recent episodes. I like to listen to the podcast while I play World of Warcraft. Oh, the whole next episode, you will find out why this is called IDDFOS thing. It had me going for a while. I guess I'm not as sharp as I thought. Yes, I raised my hand about the lifesaver, too. I love the three-part discussion on myth and the human race. Being a being who is conscious of being conscious is pretty neat, huh?
That's pretty cool. Nice turn of phrase there.
Take care and keep up the great podcast. I look forward to catching up on the episodes and hearing some new stuff. Draco X.
Thank you big time, Draco X. It's fantastic to hear from a new listener. And even better to find out that, like everyone that has written into this podcast, you've sent in quality material, well considered and well put. I can't get over how lucky I've been so far with the caliber of input that you all send in. It's just dynamite. So, yes, thank you indeed, Draco, and I hope we'll be hearing from you some more in future shows. Well now, that is the end of the emails for this episode, and after a quick break, I'm going to set off my little chipmunk rant about stupid petty things that are of little importance. It may serve to lighten the mood, or you might just find it irritating. I hope not. What happened was, I took my little digital recorder out during a lunch break this past week, and I tried to get some thoughts down for the episode. But it was just so outrageously cold. I got all cranky, and I got all irritated, and I just detonated on a list of petty gripes and decided to run with it. And so I ran with it. And what I found myself doing was, as usual, I prefer to set whiny little things like that at chipmunk speed, and that's what we'll get. It's only 15 minutes, so take heart if you don't like it, or hit fast forward if you want to get past it. But we'll be back in a bit with the rant.
Truth is stranger than fiction, and this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
People in India, known as the Kotas, are so low in the caste system of the country, they are not permitted to light a fire. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about a mountain that's a city, or the other way around. Mountains, it seems, are not only to climb. In New Hampshire, there's a mountain that's become an institution. It's craggy old Mount Washington, the first mountain of its height to be climbed in America in 1642. And it's the only land feature of its kind with the modern conveniences of a road, a railway, a hotel, a daily newspaper, a telegraph office, telephone service, a weather bureau, and radio and TV stations. All mountain grown. Believe it or not.
How's that for audio quality, huh? Makes you feel like you're right there. Fangul with his weather. Fangul, I don't mind the cold. This is too cold. This is stupid cold. Well, I got my little cheap digital Olympia out again in an effort to get something. An effort to get something recorded for show 34, for crying out loud. I may end up dumping all of this, I don't know. The audio quality's probably just gonna be that bad. I got wind blowing right across the mic. I got my mouth right on top of the condenser. But I'm not gonna stand out here holding it in my hand, away from my face, because I don't have gloves. Somebody explain something to me, okay? Somebody tell me, please, what it is with this jumping in World of Warcraft. I've seen it myself in anywhere there's a gathering of more than five players, anywhere, in a town square, I don't care whether you're Horde or Alliance, in a town square, in a raid group or whatever, there's always some weird-ass clown jumping, up and down and running around and over, and everybody's... It's like, you can't think, because you're watching this human pogo stick who can't leave his space bar alone, leaping all over the place, constantly, non-stop. And it's usually a Tauren. Not always, just usually. Can somebody explain that to me? Is it impossible when you're waiting, when you're in a raid group and you're waiting to go enter some instance or something, or you're in the instance and you're waiting to start, is it impossible for you to just stand still or maybe walk around? No, it's jumping. And I've seen it happen when Mrs. Adam 5 fights in World of Warcraft. She's a way better player than I am. I gotta tell you, hands down, she is 10 times better a player than I am. She's done the end game instances. She's done the end game stuff. Oh, good. Wonderful. F***ing great. There's a train coming. What else? Why not? But yeah, she's there, and there's 40 people hanging around waiting to get their strategy together or their buffs up or their potions drank and all the rest of the spells cast and stuff. And there's three or four of them that just won't stop jumping up and down. What is the matter with those people? And if you do it all the time, what is the matter with you? Language is very important. I'm going to leave World of Warcraft. I'm not even going to talk about beggars. I already covered that. I already talked about that in 16 or 17 or one of those two episodes. So the hell with it. Leaving World of Warcraft and online role-playing games in general. Let's talk about something else. What else? It's something I saw the other day, which was really kind of stupid. In my opinion, it was stupid. But it was very telling. It was very illustrative of what language and wording means to us. Or at least what it's supposed to mean. One of our favorite expressions around here at the shop, particularly when referring to something that is just too far gone, something that's beyond fixing, or something that was never any good to begin with, the expression is, you can't polish a turd. And of course, there are those chemically minded out there, those super scientists that say, oh yes, of course you can polish a turd, all you gotta do is freeze it first. Don't be a wise ass. So what did I see the other day? Mrs. Adam 5 and I were driving north on Route 35, and on the opposite side of the road, I saw what were office suites. It was one of those big, old-fashioned styled office suite buildings that was meant to rent out to different companies or doctors or lawyers or insurance agencies or whatever. It was a whole big, great big building, L-shaped, old-fashioned, slope roof style office suites. But they weren't office suites anymore. No. Now, they were transformed into cubicles or apartments or whatever for the elderly to live in. Now, when I was a kid, we used to call them the old folks' home or the nursing home. For some reason, you can't call them that anymore. Apparently, it's offensive to tell someone who's 86 years old that they're old. That's offensive. That's not politically correct. You're not allowed to tell them that they're old. As if they fracking cared whether you think they're old or not, or what you call them. They're 86. I'm 46. Somebody that's 86 would look down on me and say, yes, young man, and they'd be right. So we can't call them nursing homes anymore. We can't call them the old folks' home. You can't look at that building and say, that's the old folks' home on Route 35. No, there was a big billboard out front that named the place The Chelsea at Manalpin, Assisted Living Community. I think George Carlin hit it right on the money when he was talking about how stupid language is getting. How it tries to dilute something by adding more syllables. and doesn't do anything to help describe what it actually is. His perfect example was shell shock. Shell shock, it went from that to battle fatigue, and it went from battle fatigue to post-traumatic stress disorder. The more syllables you add, it seems to dilute it. So you can't call it an old folks home, you can't call it a nursing home, you have to call it an assisted living community. And what's this other business with at? I first saw this used. Now, what is this supposed to do? This is supposed to separate those who are just living somewhere with those who are of the lofty and wealthier than thou, or somehow better than thou because they live at a place. I first saw it used in Short Hills, New Jersey. When we refer to malls, shopping malls in New Jersey, we talk about, say, the Menlo Park Mall, the Livingston Mall, the Woodbridge Mall. But you can't say the Short Hills Mall. No, you see, Short Hills is a community of people that are paid incredible amounts of money or just make money for a living. They don't do anything, they just make money for a living. They're wealthy, they're outrageously wealthy. You know, $5 million houses, that kind of thing. That's Short Hills. I think every state, every county has some section where that's where the rich people live. Okay, fine. Our place nearest me is Short Hills. You can't call it the Short Hills Mall. You have to call it the mall at Short Hills. If it's the mall at Short Hills. Grandpa doesn't live in the old folks' home on Route 35 North. Grandpa lives in the Chelsea at Manalpin, an assisted living community. He lives at the Chelsea at Manalpin. Whenever he gets home from his reading at the supermarket, whenever he gets home, after he's finished reading everything on the shelves at the supermarket, cherubs meet him and carry him out of his car, past sparkling fountains and interior rainbows, to his luxury suite, where an army of butlers remove his coat and set to work on making his hot cocoa and porridge. Because he lives at the Chelsea at Manalpin. An assisted living community. So you use the right words, and it just changes everything. Spin doctors. That's what they are. Spin doctors. I wonder if that's word of the year, or if that's in the Oxford English Dictionary yet, or officially entered into any dictionary. Spin doctor. It ought to be. What else is bugging me lately? Tailgaters. Tailgaters, the people that are in such an incredible hurry that they somehow have tricked their brain into believing that if they follow you so closely that you can barely fit a piece of paper between your car and theirs, they're right behind you. But somehow that's going to convince you that you must go faster for their sake. Go faster or get out of their way, so they're right on your bumper. Now I'm going to tell you, don't do the following. Do not, under any circumstances, slam on your brakes when somebody is tailgating you. Don't ever do that, because you know what's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. They're going to successfully evade your rear bumper. They're going to get out of the way. And the guy that was driving normally, off to the right, behind them in the other lane, is going to have to swerve to avoid them or hit his brakes, and some awful accident is going to happen that harms someone that had nothing to do whatsoever with this student that was tailgating. So don't do that. No, that never happened to me, but I'm telling you, that's what would happen. And I'm sure everybody that's hearing this that drives a car or has driven a car agrees with me and Kurt the camera guy, who wrote about this somewhat recently. People who gawk at crap going on at the side of the road. You're looking ahead of you at a long line of cars that aren't going anywhere. They're moving along at a crawl because every single individual up ahead has to turn their head and go, that's it. It's a car on a jack. Somebody's changing a tire. Holy crap, I never saw nothing like that before in my life. Hey, Ma, look it. Here, I'll slow down so you can get a good gander at that fella there changing the tire. Isn't that amazing? He's off to the right, you know, it's not as if people have to slow down to keep from hitting the guy. No, he is off out of the way. Or it's just some poor schmonick whose tag's expired, or whose inspection sticker expired, and some cop is trying to make his quota, so he pulled him over and he's giving him a ticket. Same deal. Lord almighty, take a look at that. It's a police officer and a car pulled over to the side of the road. Did you ever see anything like that before in your life? I sure haven't. I better slow down, take a good long look, memorize their face. You just want to run up to the front. You just want to stop everything. Listen, as long as you're moving at a slow crawl, stop everything. Stop the whole line. Run up to the front. Get to that front car with that guy that's gawking. Haul the guy out of his car and smack him in the side of the head with a sock full of manure. What else is really boiling my bucket? I have figured out why book sales have dropped off so dramatically. I figured it out. Nobody is reading books anymore. They get all their reading done at the supermarket. I do the shopping. If you've listened to IDDFOS over the course of its run, you know by now that I do the shopping. I go out, I go get the food. And of course, the toys and candy. But I don't push a cart around in a supermarket anymore. I just don't do it anymore. I take the cart and I move it from one strategic spot to another, and I go and get what I need, because good luck, brother, trying to get your cart anywhere in a supermarket, because you're always, no matter where you are in that whole place, you are always going to run into some wallowing barge of an aisle blocker who, for whatever reason, and the place is full of these people, for whatever reason, appear to have never shopped before in their life. They were there, you can only assume that they were there last week. Most of them are adults, or old enough at least to have been shopping at least more than once in their life. How can you go to a frackin' supermarket to do your food shopping and not know what you want and where to get it? Now, granted, once in a while they shift stuff around for who knows what reason. Efficiency, customer satisfaction, whatever. They shift the sections around, remodel, redecorate, change this, change that. Okay, well, after a couple of weeks, you finally settle in as to where this is and where that is, because you usually go to the same place every week to go shopping, usually. I mean, are these people that have decided that they're going to try a new place to go shopping every week for the rest of their lives just to keep things from being boring? And while they're not wandering around in a daze and dead smack in the middle of the aisle, never to one side, and if they are doing their reading, because God knows they forgot completely what kind of pickles they picked up last week. They know vaguely, they have some vague recollection that usually every week they get pickles or mayonnaise or some kind of soup, and they forget completely what it was they had, what it was they like, what it was they buy normally. So they have to stand there on one side of the aisle, stick their cart on the other side of the aisle, oblivious to the entire rest of the frickin' human race, and read every can of soup. So no, I don't push the cart around. I go to spot A, leave it there, go get stuff, stepping around all these blockages like a slalom, like a frackin' ski slalom, and eventually I get out of there. The rest of them, of course, that aren't reading are talking on their cell phones. Not about what they need to buy, just about, you know, stuff in general to whoever. I've met people like that. I know you've met people like that too. People who... This is not exactly the best thing in the world for a podcaster to be talking about. But people who somehow believe that they will cease to exist if they stop talking. I've met and worked with people like that. It's frightening. And then what happens? They're there on the road again. I don't know whether this is true in other states, but in New Jersey, most of the time, most of the people that are spending most of their driving experience on the phone are in tall, vision-blocking sport utility vehicles. Them being up high and getting a good view of traffic in their great big vision blocking SUV doesn't keep them from driving like a toad with a concussion. But the other special feature they almost always add is they are talking on their cell phone. You know what? I should get rich. I could get rich if I could just somehow come up with a special adhesive, a non-toxic, effective, sweat-proof adhesive that would glue your cell phone to the side of your head. That way they could have hands free all the time. They could talk at work, they could talk while they're knitting, they could talk while they're jogging. That bent elbow would be a thing of the past, because I've come out with a special NM5 cell phone glue that glues the damn phone right to your face. I could call the stuff phone glue, or telephone glue, or cell phone glue. That's no good, that's too short, there's no spin to it. It doesn't let you know that you're a cut above the rest. I'd have to call it, cell phone, CP. I'd have to call it CP adhesive at your face. Give it some class. And what is the deal lately? What is the deal lately? I don't know, is this in your area? Maybe it's just in my area, I don't know. What is the deal with pulling your car up to the very front by the entrance doors of the bank or the convenience store? Parking it there and going in, like you're entering a nightclub. You know, and these aren't people delivering pizza. You know, they're not special government couriers. They're parking their cars right in front of the doors and getting out. Sometimes they just leave it running and walk in. Rather than, say, you know, travel another 15 or 20 feet and turn their wheel a little bit to go into one of the 5 or 6 open parking spaces right there. No, it isn't because they can't find a spot. I witness this. I witness this every week. What is the mentality behind somebody that does that? It's like, does it even occur to the people that are doing that? That what essentially they're screaming is, I am the most important person in the world. Screw you and everybody else. I don't have time to follow your silly rules. I'm just gonna plop my car right here in the fire zone in front of the doors and walk in. Yeah, it happens a whole hell of a lot in this county, Middlesex County, Edison, New Jersey. I also get a big kick out of these geniuses, again, at the shopping mall. It's a nice, bright, sunshiny day. They're in the parking lot, hovering like frickin' vultures, waiting for a parking spot that's near the building, particularly at shopping malls. They've got to be close to whatever entrance they're going into. And they'll sit there, and they'll wait. 15 or 20 feet behind them, there's an open spot. No, they can't park there. They might have to walk. Because as everyone knows, once you get into the mall, there are people there to pick you up and carry you around to whatever stores you want to go to. You certainly won't be doing any walking in the mall. And God forbid, you sure don't want to be doing any walking in the parking lot.
Okay, that'll do for ranting this week. Thank you. Thank you, Chipmunk NM5. Man, it was like I missed my nap. I don't know. Did any of that seem justified to you? Share any of those little peeves? It seems I degenerated into one of those negative types Kurt the camera guy was talking about earlier. I can't argue that, but what the hell? Whining can be fun sometimes. Especially if it's delivered in a clown suit with twisty balloons. But one of the things I do find not at all petty about it, and with a very solid ring of truth to it, is the use of language. And what you can say and how you can put things at certain times that really make a difference. I remember about 100 years ago, when I was doing summer stock, they would set up out in front of the theater one of those automated fountains it was a coin fountain. And they put up a little sign asking people not to, you know, reach into the fountain or step into the fountain or do whatever. And there would always be some kid, especially during the matinees, running around trying to jump in, reach in, pull on the hoses, grab up the coins, sit in the fountain, whatever, get into the water. And you could scream, or you could ask politely till you were blue in the face, the parents, to please keep their child away from the fountain, or not let the little tyke do whatever it is that they wanted to do to mess it up. You know, dropping their candy into it, or puking into it, or doing whatever. And the parents, of course, would be just completely oblivious to, you know, oh, you know, my little angel would never do anything to harm the fountain, and of course I'm going to let him or her run rampant. So the interns just couldn't keep the kids away from the fountain. The producer, who knew all about how to use language correctly, saw who were the parents and saw the kids, and walked briskly by the fountain, just glancing at the kids and then glancing to the parents, and said quickly, "There's chemicals in that." And within 15 seconds, the kid was not only away from the fountain, but never went near it again because the parents didn't want their precious little tyke coming in contact with chemicals. What the hell reminded me of that? I don't know. Something to do with language, I guess. Oh, it just made it a longer show. It just made it a longer show. What a long show this week, huh? They don't seem to be an hour anymore. I'm not sure I want to change that. It seems that if we're going to explore stuff, just 1 hour ain't enough. But I'm not going to make it any longer. I'm going to get right to the old-time radio snippet here so that we can get our coats on and start warming up the cars. This week it's going to be the Goon Show again, and this show was called The Greenslade Story, or Winds Light to Variable. Here's a 2-minute snippet of that. It's lots of fun. Give it a listen.
Winds light to variable.
Pardon?
Well, I said the winds light to variable.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Winds light to variable. I'm practicing, you know.
Don't tell me you're applying for the post of announcer.
Oh, yeah. And I'll get it too, you see. I'm wearing a Cambridge tie.
You? You were at Cambridge?
Yeah.
What were you doing there?
Buying a tie.
Mr. Liddell will see you now, Mr. Eccles.
Fine, my good woman. Well, this is it. £2,000 a year and a pension.
Get out, you idiot!
Wait a minute! You ain't even heard me speak yet.
We'll write you.
Well, that's no good. I can't read. Did you see that? He threw me out. Threw me out of the famous Eccles. He got no respect for the dead, that man. No. You can all laugh, but he never even let me say wins like the variant. I'm going to tell my electrocution teacher.
Will you come in now, Mr. Greenslade?
Thank you, madam. I was led into the presence of a BBC official. I took off my shoes and knelt down.
And you can download that whole Goon Show episode through its link in the Gooditongatongatongs for episode 34 if you'd like to give it a listen. Well, there was some heavy stuff this week, I've got to say. I felt like I was treading along a precipice when getting really deep into the dog and humans topic. I may even have fallen in. I can't say so much that I have a concrete conclusion on any of those implications, so far as the value of human life goes, but I can say that what I do have is a lot of unanswered questions. I think my thinking on it is still very fuzzy and very erratic. Everything that seems like it should have a perfectly clear black and white answer doesn't, depending on the situations and the scenarios I set up in my head. But it's time to wrap things up for this week. I've just got one more bit of news before we get to the music piece, and that is about the Latin phrase contest and the ID cards. We did get some great entries, both translated and untranslated. They don't have to be translated. But I'd like to do two things here. One, I'd like to invite more entries. I'd love to see other listeners chime in with what they think would be a good sentence to put below an IDD FOS coat of arms on an official ID card. And I'd like to let it run one more month, because at the end of the month, I'm going to set up a poll in the forums. I will list all of the entries at the end of February, and hopefully we'll have many more members signed onto the forums to vote for which one they like best. So if you would please, send in the phrase you'd like to see as a summation of this podcast, or join the forums to participate in the discussions and to vote on the entries. It'll be fun. And I should repeat here for episode 35 what the questions will be. Why do so many people seem to get such an irrational delight out of the suffering of others, and that's whether they're famous or not? And why is it that some people just cling to misery and amplify the negative all the time? Those would be our questions for episode 35. But of course, you can comment on what you heard in this show, what you heard in the last show, any IDDFOS that you've listened to and want to make a comment on or ask a question about. And now to the closing music. I kind of like Ray Ellington last time. I think I'll bring him back for an encore. So here he is singing All Right You Win, backed up by his quartet from The Goon Show. And I don't remember the year, but please enjoy this.
All right, okay, you win. I'm in love with you. Well, all right, okay, you win. Baby, what can I do? I'll do anything you say. It's just got to be that way. Well, all right, okay, you win. I'm in love with you. Well, all right, okay, you win. Baby, what can I do? Anything you say I'll do, as long as it's me and you. But the first thing in the morning, you gotta wake me with a kiss. You gotta make up for all that loving you have made me miss. Well, all right, okay, you win. I'm in love with you. Well, all right, okay, you win. Baby, what can I do? Anything you do, I'll say, it's just got to be. be that way, say. To do. All right, okay, you win. What are you waiting for? Well, all right, okay, you win. Baby, one thing more. If I'm gonna be your man, pretty baby, let me take your hand. Well, all right, okay, you win. Yes, all right, okay. Take you by the hand. All right. Okay. You win.
Now, didn't that opening sound just a tiny bit like Bad, Bad Leroy Brown? It came out years before, but I don't know. And so we reach the end of episode 34. A good one, I hope. I certainly have many people to thank this time, too. Thanks to The Stealth Geek for that excellent bumper and email. Thank you also to Mr. T, Sarah, Mad Dr. Jeff, James Stubbs Murray, all the way out there in Australia, Kurt the Camera Guy, Draco X, and thank you extremely much for listening. I hope you'll be back for episode 35, because I'll be explaining in that episode why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes extremely well for you. And until then, best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.